It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a bill that passed the state assembly would allow pharmacists in Wisconsin to prescribe some forms of birth control directly to patients. We'll talk about the role contraceptives play in post-Roe, Wisconsin. First, whether it's in a kayak or a canoe, summer's a great time to start paddling. And some of the best paddling in the state, in the Midwest even, is on the Wisconsin River. Our next guest has been planning and guiding trips on the river for years. He joins us now to talk about how to make the most of your time on the river, whether it's a few hours or a few days. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Tell us about your own river trips, big or small, on the Wisconsin River or elsewhere. Do you have a favorite stretch of Wisconsin's longest river, the Wisconsin River? Where else do you like to paddle? Call in at 800-642-1234 with your experiences or your questions for our guest. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Scott Teuber is founder and owner of Wisconsin River Outings. He's an American Canoe Association certified canoe and kayak instructor. Scott, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. It's a pleasure being here. Getting to talk to all of Wisconsin at once is incredible.
Now, do you remember your first time out paddling on the Wisconsin River?
So, yes, it turns out I used to teach in the Chicago area, and a friend of a friend did guided trips on the Wisconsin River. And on a fluke, I went up during our summer break from teaching to paddle the Wisconsin, not knowing, never having a dream that I would end up owning a business on it for the last 20 years.
Yeah, something about, I guess, that trip clearly captured your attention. What is it that made you fall in love with paddling on Wisconsin River so much that you made your career out of it?
I think we're so lucky to be in a place where, as I call it, civilization, meaning larger towns, Madison, Milwaukee, Chicago, are within a half day's drive of being somewhere, while not boundary waters remote. But once you get on the Wisconsin River, it's a wilderness experience. You're on your own. You need to make it to the next boat landing if you're having troubles or want to get off. There's no just pulling up and heading towards the road. And, you know, we're losing a sense of that. And I'm proud that I get to introduce people to that kind of experience, to feel so far away, but make a weekend of it, 3-4 days, whatever they can fit into their schedule.
And I read on the DNR website, the lower Wisconsin River, where it leads into the Mississippi, it is the longest stretch of free-flowing, meaning no dams in the middle of it, free-flowing river in the Midwest. That gives a lot of opportunities for different kinds of trips, right?
It does. And you know, I've known that for years, and I still find it shocking. But whether it's dams or just rivers that don't go that long before they dump into the into the next larger body of water, it's fascinating. Between that and the Wisconsin River is known as the hardest working river in the country. I think we're down to 22 dams that are left on it. You know, that's a combination of for flood control as well as energy, and you know, trying to balance out high and low waters. But the Wisconsin River is really quite an interesting river in the Midwest, and for that matter, the country.
Before we get into some of the practical sides of things, what are some of your favorite wildlife sightings that you've seen along this wild river? As you say, just a half day ride from a lot of civilization.
Well, and actually the first one, I was above the river. I was walking over a bridge, basically trying to spot customers and get a sense of where people were at. And a snapping turtle that, granted, I was, you know, 15, 20 feet above it, but was larger than a trash can laying on its side, a large trash can, was slowly working its way underwater upriver. That's probably the most fascinating thing I've seen. But actually, year before last, so during those COVID summers, I was on a sandbar just upriver from Muscadet, and I was out on a day paddle with a friend, and we stopped to stretch our legs, and we saw bear paw tracks in the sand. You know, obviously not an actual sighting of a black bear, but no doubt it was a black bear. That was pretty neat. And then it's the typical stuff. The number of bald eagles now along the Wisconsin. From what I understand from my contacts at the DNR, is the Wisconsin River is actually fully populated at this point with nests for bald eagles. They need about a mile and a half between each. And all of those nesting sites are taken. So they're now working their way up the tributaries. I was out 2 weeks ago for a day paddle. I don't get to get out very often, but, and I am not exaggerating. We saw at least 10, if not 15 eagles. And I swear it was not the same one over and over again.
Talking to Scott Teuber with Wisconsin River Outings, looking at river trips, paddling in Wisconsin, especially along the Wisconsin River. You could join in at 800-642-1234 if you want some practical advice on planning a river trip from our guest, or you have a favorite memory, a favorite experience to share on the Wisconsin River or other rivers around the state or beyond. Join in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Scott, let's look at your longer expeditions now, multi-day trips, sandbar camping. What goes into planning one of those?
So the bulk of our business is rentals, and we have a lot of the information laid out on YouTube and for customers to read up on. But, you know, primarily we're in the logistics business. We're trying to move people and boats up and down river as efficiently as possible. Because I'm further down river. So there's 92 miles between the dam in Sauk City and Wyalusing State Park. That whole stretch is the free flow stretch that we were talking about. There's no dams. There's a handful of bridges. I think we're around 8. So fairly remote. And we're 2/3 of the way down the river from Sauk City and about 30 miles upriver from the Mississippi. Most of our business is coming from the east heading west. So we have them stop along the way, empty out people in gear, their coolers, tents, sleeping bags, all that good stuff. And then just the drivers continue down to our shop, because most of our business is doing a paddle that's upriver from us and finishing in Boscobel. So we get them loaded up, those drivers, any gear they've rented from us in the boats, and drive them upriver. And then they put on and they're basically paddling back to their vehicles. We do provide some camping gear for rent, but meals and those kinds of things are all on the customer to bring and prepare for. And we have all sorts of tips and suggestions regarding how to feed yourself while you're on the river.
Yeah, let's get some advice there, because you've got a canoe and that's the room you have to work with. What do you recommend for people packing when it comes to their food for their camping stops along that river trip?
So the first thing to think about is the difference between a canoe and kayak, which should be pretty obvious. You know, the canoe, although we discourage it, you can pretty much bring the kitchen sink within reason. A kayak, I refer to that as backpacking on the water. You need a smaller tent. If you need the god of the nectar, the nectar of the gods in the morning, coffee. If you're in a kayak, you probably want to have a small camping stove, backpacking stove. You're not going to be able to have anything large, extravagant, heavy, because you'll be super limited on space. Regarding meals, you know, it really runs the gamut. I was just talking to a customer this weekend who frequents I'm going to go ahead and say it. He frequents Bob's Bitchin' Barbecue in Dodgeville. His family goes there first, eats lunch before they come and paddle for a multi-day trip, and then they get like a couple pounds of meat from there and just warm it up on the river.
Nice.
And that's probably my biggest suggestion. If you haven't done this very often, create meals that are easy to just warm up on the river. Make pasta sauce and just boil pasta and throw the sauce on it. Fajitas are really kind of one pan, easy to make. But we've got folks, and I've got pictures to prove it, who do steak and lobster out on the river. So it really is anything from sandwiches on. And then, as I say, it's about cooler management. If you're going to be out for a few days, you need to find ways of keeping whatever it is you're bringing out cold for that amount of time. And my biggest suggestion is labeling coolers. Make sure everybody understands you don't open coolers just to look at them, because each time you open that lid, you're losing that cool space. And basically, this is day one, lunch and dinner. This cooler is day two, breakfast and lunch. And then maybe day three is that night's dinner and the following morning's breakfast, and then they're coming off. Some of those logistical planning things that you'll learn a lot after just a trip or two.
We've got lots of callers. Let's bring on Mark now in Sheboygan. Mark, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that on the Sheboygan River, there are tons of fish in autumn in particular. And at Kohler Company, they've got something called River Wildlife, in particular at the American Club. If people want to become a member at River Wildlife, I was a member there. What we would do is we would go fishing on the river, and they've got a place where the salmon and all kinds of fish bottle up, and they jump over the river. There's literally millions of fish that go over the river there.
Interesting, Mark. Thanks a lot for that tip. Scott, do a lot of your clients do some fishing along the way on the Wisconsin River?
Honestly, not many of them, but there are a handful that go out on a mission to fish. Everything from live bait lures to we have quite a few fly fishermen also who go out, and honestly, that's a special sight to be paddling down the river and come around a corner where somebody is, you know, working a drop off and fly fishing. It's poetry. It's really pretty. So
thanks a lot for the call, Mark. We're talking to veteran river trip planner Scott Teuber with Wisconsin River Outings, talking about how to have a fun and safe adventure on the Wisconsin River or elsewhere. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Any advice, any lessons learned from your own experiences paddling on rivers? Any favorite memories of being on the Wisconsin River or one of our many other rivers around the state? Join in at 800-642-1234 with your experiences or questions. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Scott Teuber, owner and founder of Wisconsin River Outings and certified paddling instructor, talking about how to make the most out of your trip down the Wisconsin River or elsewhere. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your river paddling memories, experiences, questions for our guest. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Bob is with us in Rhinelander. Bob, hi.
Hi. I worked on the Wisconsin River to protect the water quality for over 45 years. When I started, the foam was so great on the Wisconsin River below Rothschild, you could paddle a canoe in the foam and you couldn't even see it. Below Rhinelander, the whole river was covered with sludge so small animals could walk across, and there was zero dissolved oxygen. Using the Clean Water Act, we cut back the paper mills, the 15 pulp and paper mills, by 93%, and the river recovered. It's in good water quality condition right now, but I'd like to remind people that it can go back to bad water quality if you're not vigilant, and that it's really important economically and environmentally and socially to protect rivers. And organizations in the state, like Wisconsin's Green Fire, advocate for science-based natural resources management instead of political management. The political people on the river said it couldn't be done. The river would always be an industrial river, and it was just not true. We used the science, we cleaned up the river, and everyone benefited.
Bob, thanks a lot for the call. Scott, what are you seeing with your firsthand look at the water quality on that stretch of the Wisconsin River we're talking about?
Well, the first thing I'll do is thank Bob because of the work he did who knows how many years ago. I'm able to run a successful business on a river that like we just got done talking about is special. You know, my drivers, when we drop folks off at boat landings and even in working with our customers, we do our best to make people cognizant of whether it's picking up trash, not buying the 24 pack of plastic bottles, but worst case scenario, buying 1 gallon jugs and then preferably buying a jerry can, which we also rent and reuse those. We spend time talking about dealing with human waste on the Wisconsin River, because that first stretch through from Sauk City down to Spring Green, it sees a lot of traffic. It's close and convenient to Madison. It's easy for day trippers out of Madison. And, you know, there's a lot of humans that go through there, in particular in July and August. So by everybody participating, following rules, and one of the organizations I want to shout out to is the Lower Wisconsin Riverway. There is a lot of information on their website, not only about the history of the Lower Wisconsin, but ways of protecting it, dealing with waste, whether that's human or trash. It also has a list of the outfitters that are there. There's a lot of information there for you to absorb also.
Thanks for that call, Bob. Before I go to another caller, Scott, let's talk about, we've been talking about protecting the environment on the river. How about safety? What are some pieces of safety advice you give paddlers, you know, maybe beyond the obvious, things people might not think about on the river?
So the Wisconsin River is sandy. I'm sure just about everybody listening has driven over it at some point and seen all the sandbars, and you can experience that pretty much, I believe, all the way up to Merrill. I mean, it's pretty consistent the way it is the whole way through. This lower stretch, though, it runs a little slower. It runs wider, which provides a lot of drop-offs. So the bottom is always shifting over time as those sand particles move their way downriver. The first thing is, if you're going to go to the extreme, is if your feet are wet, you should have a vest on. And in particular, I'm actually shocked by the number of people we put on the river every year who will admit they don't know how to swim. And, you know, we always make sure their vest is well fitted and they understand they need to be wearing it at all times, because on the Wisconsin, you can be walking in ankle or calf deep water 1 minute, and if you're not paying attention, take two more steps and you're going to be up to your hips or deeper. And if you're uncomfortable in the water, that's not a good recipe. The other thing is, especially for people who are used to paddling or doing activities on lakes, you know, when you're on a river, you're always moving. So whether you're out there swimming or the kids are out there swimming, somebody's got to be the one to say, guys, I don't know if you've noticed, but you've drifted 50 yards downriver. You need to stand up, get out of the water, come all the way back up, and you can and do that again. And then when you're paddling, and I've seen this because I've paddled with some younger kids, middle school kids in particular. I used to teach middle school, so this might not be that surprising, but they seem to forget if you stop paddling, that doesn't mean you stop moving. So they might be heading somewhere they don't want to go and they stop paddling. It's like, no, you actually need to keep paddling, but you need to steer that canoe out of the trees or whatever. That's another important thing to remember, that you're always moving on a river and you have to take that into account.
Let's bring on another caller. John is with us in Brown Deer. John, hi.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you for accepting my call. I know a nice smooth river trip that starts in the upper Namabin Lake, and one has to find the entrance from that lake into the Bark River. And then it's a very winding waterway, and one paddles with the current through a number of curves and twists and turns and so forth, and winds up in another small lake. And from that other small lake, I don't even know if it has a name, one can embark or begin another trip on the Bark River, and you can go as far southeast as one wants to on the Bark River. But it's a very nice casual trip between the upper Namabin Lake to that second lake that I mentioned. And one can take a fishing pole, can go fly fishing, or you can go any type of fishing in there, pack a lunch, eat it during the day. It's very pleasant.
John, thanks a lot for the call. Scott, I know your business keeps you on the Wisconsin River, but have you had good experiences on more out-of-the-way rivers in your paddling career?
Yes. Lucky enough, I'm a member of America Outdoors, also Professional Paddle Sports Association, and I have friends throughout the country. Little rivers in Indiana, the Pigeon, in Kentucky, I've done quite a few rivers in Florida, lots of day trips to do in Florida that with just crystal clear water. And actually, this fall, early November, I'm doing the Rio Grande for the third or fourth time with friends. So yeah, I mean, there's way too many out there. No one's ever going to do them all, but you try and find good ones that'll fit the bill for what you're trying to accomplish, and just do some research.
And in just our last minute or so, how about that first timer, somebody who's never been out on a river or hasn't been since maybe they were a kid? What would you recommend as a good starting expedition for them?
You know, the Kickapoo around Madison. Well, the Kickapoo on weekdays around Madison, the Sugar River, in Burlington. Is it the Upper Fox, I believe? There's so many. Only small concern right now is keeping an eye on water levels. Lucky enough, we got a little bit of rain, and hopefully that'll add. But the Wisconsin has enough water, but some of these others may be real sensitive to rainfall.
Scott, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Scott Teuber, founder and owner of Wisconsin River Outings. He's an American Canoe Association certified canoe and kayak instructor. He joined us today to share his advice for planning your next adventure on the Wisconsin River. We'll get a link to his website and some of those YouTube instructional videos. You can find them at wpr.org/centraltime. Coming up after the news, we'll talk to a reproductive rights expert about access to contraceptives in Wisconsin. That after the state assembly passed a bill that would allow pharmacists to prescribe some forms of birth control directly to patients. Still up in the air if it's going to even be considered in the state Senate in this session. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around, there's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, find out what's going on with record high prices in Wisconsin's housing market. Now, the state assembly last week passed a bipartisan bill that would allow pharmacists in Wisconsin to prescribe some forms of birth control directly to patients. The state Senate hasn't taken up the bill. It's not clear that they will in this session. But if it were passed and signed by the governor, it would reduce some barriers for women to access contraceptives and prevent unwanted pregnancies. Similar legislation has gone through the assembly in the past. This is the first time it's come up since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade and Wisconsin's 1849 abortion ban went into effect. Republican State Representative Karen Hurd of Fall Creek noted the connection between birth control and abortion during a speech on the assembly floor last week.
We can resolve some of this constitutional political tension, some of this heartbreaking dilemma that women find themselves in when they have an unwanted pregnancy or they don't want to become pregnant. Because if we can prevent the conception of a child, then there's no child to abort. There is no decision of whether I need to do this for whatever reasons a person needs to have an abort, thinks that they need to have an abortion over, well, this is the life of a child. Don't put our women through that. Let them have the opportunity to prevent conception in the first place, and they never have to go through this moral predicament that we are currently faced with.
The bill passed the assembly by a wide margin with bipartisan support, 82 to 11 in favor. 11 Republicans voted against it, and anti-abortion groups like Pro-Life Wisconsin and Wisconsin Family Action registered in opposition. Birth control and access to contraceptives are another key layer in the debate over abortion issues in Wisconsin in a time of intense scrutiny of reproductive rights and health care. You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you support this bill that would allow pharmacists to prescribe some forms of hormonal birth control? Why or why not? What impacts do you think more access to birth control could have? How do you see this playing into the abortion debate in Wisconsin? Have you or your family been more interested in birth control since that Roe v. Wade decision was overturned? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Elisa Von Hagel is a professor of political science at UW-Superior who researches reproductive rights, the pro-life movement, and the religious right. Elisa, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Starting with this bill in the state legislature allowing pharmacists to prescribe some forms of hormonal birth control, how big a deal would that be when it comes to access to contraceptive options, Elisa?
It would significantly increase the options, particularly for women in rural communities. As was mentioned throughout the legislative hearings by many, women in rural communities have very little access to medical practitioners, the time travel to medical facilities, in addition to reduced number of physicians in general, means that having access to physicians and to obtain and then maintain their contraception is very, very difficult. So it would be a significant impact for women across the state, of course, but certainly for those women in rural communities as well.
And this would cover, the birth control pill, the most famous form of birth control, a hormonal patch, not certain other options like implants and things like that. When it comes to the choices women are making these days, how many people would be covered by that? How big an impact would that have?
Well, we have seen in studies that women prefer to have multiple forms of contraception, and there was some concern that only those two methods of contraceptive devices were included. So as you mentioned, the implants, the Nova Ring are not included, which, you know, women prefer a variety of different types of contraceptive devices because, as we know, you know, not every device works perfectly for every woman. And so it certainly doesn't necessarily cover everyone or will help everyone, but it is, I guess, one move in the direction of ensuring greater access for more people.
Turning to the politics of this now, if I said, hey, there's a law related to birth control and it's passing a chamber of the legislature, 82-11, tons of bipartisan support to it, this isn't something that happens every day. Why do you see this being successful, at least the assembly? We'll put a pin in the Senate for now.
Right. Well, I mean, you're correct that this is quite astonishing, to say the least. And I mean, as we've seen post-Dobbs, you know, everything has changed across the United States and in Wisconsin, obviously, specifically. We have across the nation and in Wisconsin increased demands for contraception as well as sterilization across the board because of concerns given the Dobbs ruling. They're also in Wisconsin specifically, we saw in the last Supreme Court election race, a very wide margin for the liberal justice who won, giving the court a liberal majority, which, and given the, you know, dynamics and elections that have occurred since the Dobbs ruling, it seems as if abortion is maintaining its position as a key election issue. And so Republicans are genuinely concerned how this will play out in upcoming elections, given that, you know, majorities of Americans, as well as Wisconsinites, do want to have some access to abortion.
Talking to Elisa Von Hagel from UW-Superior, looking at contraception access, abortion access after the Dobbs decision, and a bill in the state legislature passed the assembly, not yet the state Senate, that would allow pharmacists in Wisconsin to prescribe certain forms of birth control. They can't do that right now. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your reactions to that legislation, your thoughts on access to contraception here in the state. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Elisa, we heard a Representative Hurd there, a Republican, making that explicit connection, like, hey, we're arguing about abortion. It's a divisive issue. Maybe, she says, by providing more access to contraception, we can prevent the need for it, at least for some people. What do you think about that explicit connection from that lawmaker?
I mean, I think it's an argument that Democrats have been making in the state, for a while now, that as you mentioned, this legislation has come up in the past, and it certainly had not maintained the bipartisan support that it gained this time around. And so I agree that it is, that there definitely is that connection. However, I think now it is more of a, it is correct in her statement, but given the large upswell in support from Republican representatives, there does seem to be some political maneuverings in terms of reading the signs of what is going on, with the abortion issue in Wisconsin.
And as I mentioned, some groups opposed to abortion who often support Republicans or back Republican-led initiatives, they opposed this legislation that would allow pharmacists to prescribe some contraceptives. Can you talk about the politics within the anti-abortion world and those groups that might say, yeah, we also don't want to advance contraceptive access?
Right. So many of the groups that are opposed to this are, as you mentioned, are opposed to abortion in general and maintain or argue that hormonal contraceptions are abortifacients. The medical community overwhelmingly has determined that that is not the case, that it prevents implantation. However, many of these groups maintain that it can or does potentially, essentially cause an abortion, which, again, the medical community does not support as fact. And there are other arguments that are made concerning women's health and safety by removing, or not necessarily removing, but by allowing women to go around visiting their physicians and just going to a pharmacist. And there are, many other arguments regarding other avenues to prevent unplanned pregnancies, mostly involving abstinence, marriage, that sort of thing. So I think the typical arguments that are made in opposition to abortion are at stake here.
One other aspect of this legislation is it would accord with what's called the conscience clause in the state that says a pharmacist who has religious objections doesn't have to fill a prescription for birth control. That would be also true for prescribing birth control if that became legal for pharmacists. Can you talk about what's become known as the conscience clause when it comes to birth control and pharmacists?
Correct. So absolutely. So physicians as well as pharmacists have this law basically protecting their moral religious beliefs in opposition to either abortion or birth control contraceptive devices. And thus they are allowed to take a step back and not be directly involved in providing, again, either an abortion or contraceptive devices to the person with a prescription. And so this would still maintain that protection. This was brought up in the hearings from some of those opposed to this bill, that there is that there are not sufficient protections for pharmacists in this respect. However, we do know that that is not the case, that pharmacists will be protected if they do not agree with or believe religiously that contraceptive devices are moral or religiously acceptable.
We're talking to UW Superior political science professor Alisa von Hagel about access to contraceptives and their role in reproductive health and the broader abortion debate as well. The thing that prompted this discussion, a bill passed the state assembly, may or may not hit the state Senate. This bill would allow pharmacists in Wisconsin to prescribe a couple of different forms of birth control here in the state. They can't do that currently. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see more access to birth control here in Wisconsin? If pharmacists could prescribe birth control, is that something that would be useful for you, or would it have been useful for you at some point in your life? What do you think of this idea? If you're a pharmacist yourself, love to hear your perspective on it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Alisa von Hagel, political science professor at UW-Superior and reproductive rights expert. With us today for a look at a state assembly bill. It passed. It would allow pharmacists to prescribe some forms of birth control directly to patients. Still waiting to see if the state Senate will pick that one up. And we're looking at wider issues of access to contraceptives and how it connects to reproductive health and abortion issues now that Roe v. Wade was overturned almost exactly a year ago. You could join in at 800-642-1234. How does your stance on abortion interact with your stance on contraception? Do you have concerns about expanded access to birth control, allowing pharmacists to prescribe some of those hormonal birth controls? Do you see it as a good idea? Join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Elisa, turning to wider issues now related to abortion rights here in Wisconsin, we've got a change coming in the state Supreme Court after that election you mentioned earlier. Justice-elect Protasiewicz will become Justice Protasiewicz in August, giving the liberals a 4-3 majority on the court. Do you expect to see related cases start percolating and maybe hit the court after that change happens?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we know that there is a lawsuit currently making its way through the court, brought by the Attorney General of Wisconsin, Josh Call, directly challenging the 1849 abortion ban, and you know, no doubt there will be other issues that will be at play or will be introduced through litigation to hopefully make its way to the court now that it has for the first time in however many decades that liberal majority.
And I don't want to try to predict the future, but how sweeping could changes be? I mean, do you think it's possible that the Supreme Court could, in Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Supreme Court could ultimately strike down or limit that 1840s abortion law here in Wisconsin?
I mean, prognostications are always difficult on these types of issues, but I mean, it very well could be the case that 1849 ban is struck down and Wisconsin returns to the pre-Dobbs environment. There could be, as you mentioned, sort of limitations or sort of changes to that ban that would allow for greater access, but would not necessarily return Wisconsin to pre-Dobbs. And so there's a million different things that could happen between now and then with respect to any type of rulings that are made. But I mean, if we are, you know, looking forward, that does seem to be an environment that would be conducive to bringing back some access to and some greater clarity to physicians, specifically in the state of Wisconsin, regarding when abortions can be provided and what protections they have as physicians from providing abortions when they are asked for by patients or they are needed for the woman's basic health and safety.
Let's bring in our caller now. Laura is with us in Manitowoc. Laura, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So here's my question. The guest mentioned some sort of protection for a pharmacist that would object to, you know, on religious grounds to prescribing birth control. First off, I'll say I do want to see, yes, I would like to see pharmacists be able to prescribe the birth control. But I'm thinking in my town here where the pharmacist, is Christian and could potentially object. We have employment law that protects the employer from asking what that pharmacist's religion is and protects them from refusing to hire them based on the religion. But what is the pharmacy to do? Hire a second pharmacist who will prescribe the birth control? I mean, that really puts the employer in a sticky wicket. Is there anything built into the law that would allow the employer greater leverage in who they decide to hire?
Gotcha. Laura, thanks for the call. And Elisa, these debates have been around for a while with the conscience clause as it relates to a pharmacist filling that birth control prescription. And maybe it's a town with one pharmacy and it could support one pharmacist per shift. How have we seen that issue play out, Elisa?
Right. I mean, absolutely. I mean, especially in these rural communities, these are issues that are currently, you know, being dealt with. And so, and as the caller mentioned, employers are not allowed to ask for individual's religious beliefs. However, if a person does have a conscientious objection, that there are forms that are filled out, given to their employer. So the employer is aware of this at the start, and thus, given that, you know, this sort of situation arising, hopefully one would hope that there would be some mechanism in place, whether it is, again, sending prescriptions to the other closest pharmacy, or ensuring some ability for the person to gain this prescription would be provided. And so, again, I believe it's sort of a ad hoc situation at this point, as there has been no movement to clarify basically the expectations or the requirements for physicians or pharmacies to provide this in general. So it's still sort of an ad hoc basis that will certainly most likely be at an issue if this legislation were to pass.
Laura, thanks for the call. Jeff joins us now in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Hi, I'm curious if a woman was married and she had a husband, and the husband, the man, objected to her getting contraception, would he have any right to block that from occurring, or is it purely a woman's individual right?
Jeff, thanks for the call. My understanding, Elisa, is the answer would be no. The man wouldn't, unless they have something wrong.
No, correct. Absolutely. It is. There are no requirements or expectations that a married woman would have her husband's consent to obtain this.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. Elisa, let's look toward the future now. Now, this bill regarding pharmacists may or may not pass, may or may not get taken up at all by the state Senate. What other avenues related to laws related to contraception and abortion do you have your eye on right now?
There is a bill that has been introduced that would clarify the or that would provide the provide for abortion in cases of rape and incest, that has been introduced by the Republicans. Evers, I believe, has stated that he would not sign it into law, as he will only sign into law something that would expand or provide access for all Wisconsinites, access to abortion. And thus, you know, whether how far a bill such as that would go forward, it's hard to see, but that is one particular bill that will most likely we'll be hearing about in the upcoming months as well. And I think more so looking forward to seeing how the courts start to weigh in on the case before them, I think will be the most important to determine reproductive rights in the state of Wisconsin in the coming years.
And in the coming year and a half, we've got this election campaign, president, Congress, all points down below that as well. How big an issue do you think abortion and contraception will be in this next, almost 18 months?
Well, I mean, what we've seen in the past since the Dobbs ruling, it's played an outsized role, surprisingly outsized role. The question always remains is whether or not that momentum can continue once to the, you know, the 18 months down the road. It's hard to say, especially in states where abortion is no longer accessible to women. It would suggest that it will still be a very important issue coming up in the months closer to the election. So I believe that it will still be a central issue and something that Republicans have expressed concern for and are attempting to prevent an outsized impact of abortion impacting elections in the upcoming election cycle.
Elisa, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me today.
That's Elisa von Hagel, professor of political science at UW-Superior, who researches reproductive rights, the pro-life movement, and the religious right. She joined us today for a look at a proposal that would allow Wisconsin pharmacists to prescribe some forms of birth control and what that could mean for reproductive health in the state. That bill has passed the Assembly by a pretty wide margin. Still not clear if the state Senate plans to take it up during this session. If you want to hear more about that issue, check out the archives at WPR.org. The morning show heard from the state's Pharmacy Association, got their perspective on how this bill might actually work. Again, check that out and our extensive archives online at WPR.org or download the Wisconsin Public Radio app. Coming up Monday on the tomorrow, on the morning show, a top state election official is getting close to the end of her term in office, and some leading Republicans don't seem to want her back. Should she stay or should she go? Join that conversation coming up tomorrow morning at 8. That's here on the Ideas Network. Fact one, a lot of dogs like to retrieve frisbees and other off-brand flying discs. Fact two, disc golf or frisbee golf is getting more popular lately. One dog put those two things together to rescue over 150 discs from a local forest, and now they're going up for sale, the discs, not the dog. As reported in the Washington Post, Daisy, the yellow lab, and her human live in West Virginia. Their daily walks often go through the woods on the edge of a disc golf course. 4 years ago on a walk, Daisy dashed into the woods on her extended leash, came back with a lost disc from the course. Since then, Daisy's gotten into the game, rounding up 155 discs at last count. They started to build up. Now they're up for grabs. If they got a name on them, owners can reclaim them with a suggested donation for animal rescue. The rest will be sold to raise money for the park that contains the disc golf course. My question, I've never played the game, but over 12 dozen discs lost in the woods? That's gross incompetence, people. Dog and sports news you can use. This is Central Time.